come into this world unknown. But know that we are not alone. They try to knock us down. But change is coming. It's our time now. Hey. I don't sing.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. Of course, I am your host, Clay, and I'm starting to feel like I'm the only real host of this podcast, because Mark has completely left me for the beautiful mountain ranges of Alaska and the whales and a 1,200 foot zip line, which I'm very jealous of. But
did he do that?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
I think so, because when he sent the picture, it was on the top of the zip line, like basically right when you push off.
Yeah.
So
nice. I am Juice Wayne, everybody. Sorry. I cut in here, but I was like, zip line. I was like, that sounds crazy. But I'm for a second week.
Need to send you the picture. It looks insane.
Yeah. Was that in the Slack chat or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's why. I was like, I didn't see that on Twitter.
Yeah, so, no, he...
All right, nice.
I think he's been posting some stuff on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw a waterfall today. So I was just like, that looks dope. I mean, it's stuff like that I see when I go to California, so I'm envious of stuff like that.
It looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's something that now me and Abby have talked about. I'm like, ooh, Mark just went on an Alaskan cruise. Maybe after Disney World, we'll, you know, maybe look into doing that. It's cool. This week on comics, we have five books like always. Going to be completely honest, very lackluster. Nothing too crazy except for our biggest book of the week, which we're going to leave until the very end. But, Juice, how you doing, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's nice to be on the podcast for a second week. This is very, you know, I'm definitely trying to get my podcast going this year, so it's a nice little routine thing to be on a podcast for a second week in a row. So it's pretty cool, man. But I've just been getting back on that Apex grind, man. Season 2 is dropping, and I'm just like, oh, I gotta keep playing.
So do you suck as much as you thought you did, like, when, like, coming back to it?
No, surprisingly not. Like, first few games, I was already getting, like, multiple kills and stuff. So I'm like, all right, cool. But I'm trying out... Dude, they've changed the map a lot in season 2. Yeah, I'm just like, oh, man, I don't even know where to drop. They got rid of the hot zone. So there's not a hot zone anymore. So you kind of just drop wherever. And they drop care packages right at the start of the game now. So it's, like, really different. So I'm getting used to that. And the new character is just like, I don't know how to use her yet. So... It's very interesting, but I love it. I think it's dope.
I may have to jump on right after this.
Yeah,
because
I'll be playing for sure.
I will. I'm super rusty, and so you probably won't want to play with me because I'll freaking drag the team down.
I played with Sam and Nova, so it weren't that great.
All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into this. First book we're going to be talking about is Batman TMNT 3. Actually, it's really funny that it's 3 because this is issue 3 that we're going to be talking about tonight. So, of course, this is the whole thing with the Crisis in a Half Shell. Very cool play on words, I always thought. But this is the somewhat origin of this mashed-up universe that has been created for this series of this third installment. We see a little bit of a different spin on Bruce Wayne's origin as far as... Thomas and Martha Wayne. It does involve Joe Chill, like always, but it involves the Turtles as well. So a little different. The Waynes were not shot dramatically. but instead they were plowed down by a truck.
Which might have been a little worse, to be honest.
Dude, I didn't expect, because there's a part where it's like the panels are kind of all over the place when he's telling Bruce to get out of the way. If you look at the panel where Bruce is kind of looking back or whatever, and you just see Thomas's hand kind of just like out in the the corner of the truck, I'm like, oh my god, they actually showed this. And then they showed his like mangled up arm, like caught up in the tire and everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, whew, man, they really went there. They went all out.
Yeah, it was very interesting. You definitely see the turtles just fall into the sewer. And then it kind of just goes to, like, I guess Bruce just jumped down there with them and has lived there forever?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Yeah. But, like, he just met these turtles, so it's not like he has a huge bond with them, and he's already like, oh my god, my turtles!
Yeah.
And, like, instead of, like, staying there with his parents, he's like, sorry. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Dad. It's the turtles that need the care now.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at these panels, just so nobody's like, well, you guys just didn't look at it right. It's totally Bruce, as you can say that, you know, this isn't real, and it looks like he slips into the manhole, like he slips on the ooze and falls in, kind of like he falls into the cave when he becomes Batman. So there's kind of that little bit of symbolism there, so I don't want anybody to say that we're skipping over that. But yeah, that definitely seems like that's what's happening. Instead of falling into the cave to be full of bats, he's falling in the same sort that turtles fell in.
Yeah.
So, and then it goes to the whole, like, Splinter talking to Bruce and all that jazz.
Yeah, and it's they're talking about how they're regaining memories. You know, this Raphael from the black and white universe of the TMNT is really trying to convince everyone, hey, this is the route that we need to go because it's the most important. We need to find these people. And they're set out to find April O'Neil. While Bruce Wayne is actually going to the Wayne Manor, he finds Alfred, the Smile Clan.
Which is weird.
Yeah, so weird. Finds April O'Neil first, but the turtles are there. They're able to save her, but you come to find out that they also need to find Shredder.
Yeah.
Because the black and white turtle, Raphael, he got captured and he told them, hey, you need to find Shredder because the Smile Clan needs to be turned back into the Foot Clan. And all during this time, Bruce and Alfred embrace in the Wayne Manor, and they are regaining all of their prior memories. You know, I thought this was going to be a little bit more impactful and that, like, he would get, like, a new, like, more of the Batman suit that we know, but he really doesn't. But that's basically the entire thing. You know, at the very end, they do meet Shredder. Yeah. He's not in his normal, you know, gear that everybody knows and loves. But the turtles confront him and said, hey, we need your help. And that's basically it. It was a super quick read because, like I said, I completely forgot about this book and read it right before we started recording.
Yeah.
And it literally took me like 5 minutes. Super, super short. I still love the art on this. I love the character designs. Some things are a little weird and wacky, but I think that's the whole purpose of this whole, you know, Crisis in a Half Shell thing.
Yeah.
But it's part three. I don't know. I think this is a 6-issue series, so this is the halfway point. So
yeah. I love Crisis in a Half Shell. Love the title. I think that's dope. They're using the Crisis font from the, you know, very classic Crisis stories. I have not been reading these stories. It's funny. I buy these. I've bought every issue of the Turtle series from the first one to this one. Never read any of them. I just buy them. And I'm just like, yeah, I got them. So, and I know they're in trades. Still haven't bought those. The previous ones, I should say. But, yeah, this was very interesting, and I was very confused. I was like, what the hell's happening? Why is there a gray freaking Raphael in this? But it was kind of cool, you know? It's like one of those ones you just kind of throw caution to the wind and just enjoy the ride. But I thought it was pretty interesting. The Smile Clan stuff was kind of weird, but it is kind of that mishmash of just like, well, it's the Turtles universe and the Batman universe, kind of like that Batman Ninja movie they made that was very Japanese-inspired, which I loved, although it was very wacky as well. And that's kind of what this was. And, yeah, I enjoyed it. The art is not really that much of my tasting. I don't have an issue with it, but it's just, like, a little too, like, sketchy and, like, painty for me. But other than that, the story's cool. Like, it's interesting. It's not something that really made me be like, oh, my God, this is such a great concept. Also, I don't know if you feel this, but, like, seeing the Martha Thomas Wayne stuff again for, like, the bajillionth time, I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of over this. Like, and I see it all the time because I read so much Batman, you know? And I know it's always a calling back point, but I feel like – and I made this point when everybody's like, oh, my God, when it comes to BVS, like, everybody's like, why would we need to see that again? And the biggest point I've ever said is, like, look, if you ever had the chance to make a Batman movie, that is one of the most iconic scenes ever. Why wouldn't you want to put your own spin on that? And this person in this comic was like, exactly, that's what I want to do. So I respect that. But just, I've read it so many times, I'm just like, ugh, again.
You know, I would have appreciated it just because there has been so many great Batman stories since the original death of the Wayne family. If he would remember, like, Damian or, like, his protégés or, you know, something crazy like that, or maybe he's remembering the actual crisis. And then, like, near the end when he's gained all of his memories, you know, maybe, you know, throw in the death of Martha and Thomas Wayne just so that way, you know, you can say that he has made full circle with all of his memories. But yeah, it's a very big argument that everybody has. It's going to be something that will probably happen and most likely happen in the Matt Reeves films.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I'll just say this. The next book that we're going to be talking about, Doom Patrol. Well, first off, let me just ask you. Just first initial thoughts. Just, like, throw them out there. What'd you think?
It was okay. It was fine. I didn't think anything. Okay, so I've seen the show more than I've read the books. So I knew some of the characters, so, like, I was just, all right, cool, whatever. I was like, this is very Doom Patrol-y. But it wasn't something that really jumped out at me that I would have been like, if I would have read this for the first time, didn't know anything about Doom Patrol, wouldn't have necessarily recommended this book to somebody. But I will say that the way this book ends, I was like, whoa. I was like, that's dope. I like how they're so goofy, but they also have, like, a realism about this story. Thought that was cool.
Yeah, I will say this. It should not have a number one attached to it.
I didn't even notice that. Is this the first one back?
Yeah. So this is...
It kept referencing other comics.
Yes, and that is the reason why.
Yeah, okay.
Because first page, it references two issues, number 6 and number 11, and as you go down, it just keeps referencing other parts of the series that was right before this.
Yeah.
So this is, like, blatantly a continuation of that past series. They should not have put a number one on this.
Yeah, that's confusing as hell.
Especially after the show just ended. There's going to be a whole new wave of Doom Patrol fans. They're going to jump into this book and not know what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
I was very turned off by that.
Yeah.
But, like you said, there is some very serious parts. I just recently bought the volume 1 of the Archives of Doom Patrol, and I've been reading that for quite some time. So I have picked up some of the, like, Golden Age history of Doom Patrol. So, like, what's his name? Negative Man. You know, with Larry and the Negative Man comes out or whatever. And this book, I realized Negative Man actually talks.
Yeah.
Which is not normally a thing that he does back in the Golden Age, so I guess that's something newer that has happened recently. So that was interesting. There were some characters that I had never knew was a part of the Doom Patrol universe, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
Like this this cat dude. And
Fug. Fug is Fug.
Yeah.
but
overall, it was just a weird, wacky story.
Yeah.
Just like you said, the way the show was, you know, honestly, I would have, and Mark, I'm sorry if this is one too many F-bombs, but if Robot Man would have said, what the fuck in this book, it would have been perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Just because of all the stuff that we have seen as fans of the show. And I'm sure they'll start integrating some of that stuff, for sure. But very wacky. The art was wacky as well. Especially like when it came time for Cliff's story, it was very grayscale, dark. Just because you knew that was the kind of the meat of the story as far as like the progression. Mm-hmm. I think everything else was kind of just like, hey, we're doing this just to do this. But it was just a crazy story with a crazier ending. You know, where Cliff, he's the one thing that we should say is that he's human in this issue. Something that probably happened in the series prior. And now he is, you know, driving in his car and he has this crash and all you see is the flames. And it says, next issue, hello metal, my old friend. Probably referencing that he will become Robot Man again. So very intense. And I hope that they play it a little bit more on the serious side when that happens. Next issue.
Go ahead. With this issue, and the one thing I've appreciated with the Doom Patrol show, like I said, I think that is going to get a lot of people into the comic book. So I can see why DC threw a number one on this, but they should have went a Doom Patrol route with like number one of part two or, you know, something very Doom Patrol-y, like with the number one title, and just did something very crazy there. But so one thing the show did very well was it was super wacky, and they had a bunch of one-liners that were great. I mean, I always say the one that I love the most, which is the Flex Metallo episode where he's flexing. Some crazy stuff happens. Love that scene. But even in the show, they were always able to balance the silliness with some very serious stuff at the same time. And I love seeing that in the comic book because, I mean, for those of you that are not going to read this or you haven't read it yet, the premise is basically they go to this planet that is a fitness planet, and they're trying to see what the problem is. And apparently these people are super into fitness, or they're being told they're supposed to be into fitness, but they're meant to be basically like these weird round alien-type people or something like that. And so, of course, the Doom Patrol saves the day in their own wacky way. And so that craziness is happening. But then you have this serious story going on with Cliff that he ends up pretty much committing suicide at the end of the story. So it's just like, holy crap. Like, you went from these weird round alien people to a very serious, like, real life story. And I always appreciate that stuff when it comes to comics. So, yeah, Doom Patrol is very wacky. But, I mean, it was solid, you know. Again, I wouldn't recommend this if I knew nothing about the Doom Patrol, but since I've seen the show and I've read a little bit of stuff prior to this, I would be like, yeah, dude, check out Doom Patrol if you're into this. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So.
For sure. I would highly recommend finding the Gerard Way Young Animal series that had just recently ended.
Yeah.
That was, I think Young Animal was technically in the Vertigo realm of DC.
Was it?
Or I don't know if Young Animal was its own imprint. I think Young Animal might have been its own imprint.
I think it was its own imprint. Because they I don't think those Milk Wars ones had I don't think it had a Vertigo logo on it. I think it was Young Animals was just Young Animals.
Okay, cool. So yeah. So this is going to be an interesting book to talk about because it kind of breaks everything that we thought about a prior issue. We're talking about Justice League here.
Yeah.
Justice League number 27. This is a story mainly with a Martian Manhunter, and then it goes off to the actual Justice League group where we see a familiar face, but we'll get to that pretty soon. The story that I want to talk about is this Martian Manhunter, which opens the book.
Yeah.
And it talks about Martian Manhunter's childhood. So, we had talked about this before, mm-hmm. talking about how we thought this was something that was implanted into Lex Luthor's head with Martian Manhunter, basically trying to trick him to probably forward a plan that is something that Snyder is working at throughout this Justice League title.
Yeah.
But with this, I think it's actually confirming that all that was real, but maybe some aspects Martian Manhunter kind of put, you know, in Lex's head. So he actually was caught by the government or whatever in Lionel Luthor. Lex was there because you just see him right there in the corner of the panel. And my biggest thing was that Lionel Luthor was supposed to, you know, not remember any of this because of the events at the very beginning of this Justice League run. You know, with the whole thing with Vandal Savage, and the totality and everything else. But we find out that it's not actually Lana Luthor. It's actually an android. And this android was pretty much a trap placed by Lex Luthor that has a much bigger android that we all know as Amazo. And so Martian Manhunter is fighting Amazo and, well, he actually gets captured by... it's not even Lex Luthor. It's actually Tio Maro. That's who it is. Tio Maro and Amazo capture Martian Manhunter. They're saved by Hot Girl. And they fight all these miniature Amazos because they're not completed. You know, they're not as strong as what the original Amazo would be with all the powers of the Justice League.
Yeah, they're stripped down.
Yeah. And so... we just see Martian Manhunter and Hawk Girl, you know, demolish these Amazos throughout this whole thing. And Martian Manhunter even goes after Tio Maro in a very vicious way. And Hawk Girl, you know, stops him and everything else. And, you know, they talk it out outside because Martian Manhunter has basically been ignoring everybody. And, you know, he's been saying, hey, Lex Luthor is alive. I know this. I can feel it. We need to find him. He's the main priority. And Hawk Girl is trying to say, no, he's not. We have bigger things to worry about. And then there's a drone that basically confirms that Lex Luthor is alive. And not only that, it's this like weird Martian-esque hologram that you're seeing that they're calling Lex. And he is basically saying, I can give you me. And he's telling him, I can tell you where I am. But that's the side story. One of the bigger stories with a very familiar face is with the Justice League and the Monitor.
Yeah.
The original Monitor, something that – or a character that some people might be familiar with because of the CW shows recently with the big crossover. They find him – and I completely forgot up until this point where they referenced it here. I forgot that he was part of Metal.
Yeah.
I completely forgot that he was at the end of Metal. But they find him. They're basically telling him everything that needs to happen, that he needs to be a part of the team to help them fight Doom and eventually fight Perpetua. But he gives them insight that, like, none of this is supposed to be real. Talking about the New 52 or the Rebirth universe that they've created through Flashpoint, because Flash starts to get an echo of a memory of the original Crisis about when he died. Awesome. That I love that because those panels were actually part of the book, and I actually have it like right behind me.
Nice,
but that was really really cool. I love the heart to heart that. The World Forger and Monitor kind of have, you know, basically saying, you know, we need to do this. You know, we've kind of messed up and we need to fix these things. But Monitor says the only way we can really fix this is if we get the Anti-Monitor. So they're going to get the three original sons of Perpetua to fight Perpetua and then might even go after the Judges, which I think they reference as well in this issue. So, really, really cool issue. I'm not a huge fan of the art. You know, ever since Jimenez left, I've kind of just been like, eh. Yeah. But I think it's one of those where Jimenez will, you know, continue to be working on future arcs of this story. And then I think this book is drawn by... Javier Fernandez and Bruno Rodano, they'll basically be rotating this entire, this entire arc. But art was not all that great. I do love the story. Tinian has not always been my favorite writer, but he does fill in the gaps pretty well whenever it comes to these stories, so... yeah. I enjoyed it.
You think? So I thought this was just kind of like, I mean, I feel like the last few Justice Leagues have been pretty solid. And, you know, you can't have – it's not always – you're not always going to knock it out of the park. This one I thought was just okay. I will say that right now I absolutely hate Lex Luthor not being human anymore. Absolutely hate it. So every time I see him, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I just – I'm not a fan of it. Because I've always liked the idea. It's kind of like, you know, Batman versus Superman. I like the idea that a human can take on a god. Like, I've always liked that mentality. So knowing that he's a Martian or whatever, because even if they want to bring him back later on to being human, they have to go. They're gonna have to go through some convoluted thing, or like the Forager is gonna just change him back, like something real quick. I just feel like that's never gonna happen unless they're gonna keep him this new form forever, which I think is just dumb. And maybe they just want to be able to have Lex Luthor fight Superman head on. I don't really know. I just like that he's been super smart and he's always been able to take on Superman. But that's a side story. But yeah, I thought the issue was okay. I was, just like you were mentioning, very confused. Or not very confused, but I was like, oh, so that's not a lie? Or it could be maybe we got some Inception stuff going on here, and maybe Martian Manhunter has starting to believe the lie instead of really knowing what his past is. Because he did get all the memories from that that old person that the fake, what is it, Thanagar or whatever had. He got all those memories. So maybe he's just, like, getting really confused now, and maybe he doesn't even know his past anymore. So that would be really so interesting intense. To see if that turns into something. But, yeah, everything else, like the monitor stuff was cool. Really absolutely loved the Flash part where he was getting the echo of the previous crisis stuff. But there wasn't really much else that made me go, like, wow, about this. It was cool to see, you know, Professor Ivo and, you know, Amazo again. That was pretty dope. But, you know, it was all, like, cool. I mean, I love that, obviously, they were androids. They weren't, like, the real characters. At least that's the way it came across in the book. Because they were all androids, right? Like, even when he got to them. Like, yeah, so that was really interesting. And then I did like the little, like, back and forth that the... What is the kid's name? The kid to...
Oh, yeah, Shane?
Yeah, him and Starman's back and forth where he, like, pinched him to make sure if he exists. So, like... The kid doesn't really know what's going on. For those of you that are not reading Justice League, they went to this, what is the sixth dimension, right?
Yep.
Is where everything happened. And they pulled this kid with them from the sixth dimension, and he's supposed to be the son of Hawkgirl and Martian Manhunter. And so he has wings, but he looks like Martian Manhunter. And he doesn't really know what's going on. He's kind of just like, you know, a kid that's kind of just trying to figure out who he is. And then he had this cool little back and forth with Starman, who basically said, he was like, I know about all things that exist. Like, it's, you know, it's what I do. And so they had this cool little banter, and they're going to go work on something. I don't really know what that's referencing to. But I thought that was kind of cool. But, yeah, I mean, that was an okay episode. I mean, episode, a cool, okay issue. But, yeah, nothing that really made me be like, wow, I can't wait for the next issue. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know that, you know, all of this is kind of leading up to the issues that everybody is dying for coming at the end of the summer with the resurrection of the JSA and all those characters, pretty much the meat of the Year of the Villain. So looking forward to that stuff, just wanting to know how exactly they get there.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting story overall. But this next book, I will admit, is a book that I did not ask for. It is a 12-issue maxi series spinning out of the stuff that has been going on in the Action Comics book. This is Lois Lane by Greg Rucka. I will admit, I was not 100% down with this book. I read it, and some of it was, you know, I felt like Lois Lane. Some others I really didn't. And it really did just focus on her, which I will admit... I was afraid that for a first issue, it may not do that. Mm-hmm. Really surprised that it did. And, you know, like you were saying before we started recording, they're actually talking about in this issue a picture that was alluded to in Action Comics this just past week with Superman kissing Lois Lane. And this whole thing kind of unravels. And now basically everyone knows because it was published. And so we get to see how Clark reacts to basically people side-eyeing Lois and giving her that mean look. And there's like this scruffy old man whispers to himself and calls Lois Lane a slut.
Yeah.
And just like all this weird stuff. And Clark, for once, is kind of like, you know, taking it all in.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, I didn't realize how crazy this was going to be. Which for me, it's so weird to think about that, you know, this is basically the first time they're really thinking about this because they've been together for so long and married and stuff. So I do feel like this is a kind of a step back for their character development.
Yeah.
But it is something interesting to really look at just because I don't think they've really looked at it before in this capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we do get this good back and forth between Clark and Lois, pretty much saying that, you know, they can do this. You know, she lives her life. He lives his. And, you know, everything's going to be okay. But in the middle of the story, she actually meets the question, which when she meets the question the first time, let me just double check here. It looks like
in a parking lot. Well,
that's the thing. Yeah. You see the first panel of the question, and it looks like him. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the end of the book and see the question, it's definitely her, Montoya.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think this book is basically confirming that there is two questions right now in the DC universe, which I find
fine. Everybody has multiple questions.
But I think they will probably play it off this way, so that way there is that type of character both in the Leviathan book and in the Superman action Lois Lane storylines. But it kind of ends on this very political note here, where Lois Lane kind of stands up and just, like, mops the floor with this woman giving this press conference. She is giving out all this information and questioning all this information. And the spokeswoman is saying, okay, we can't answer that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And eventually it kicks out Lois Lane for, you know, basically disrupting, quote unquote. And, you know, we've seen this multiple times throughout the past few years through real life stuff. And so I can very much see a lot of that here.
Oh, yeah.
And it says that, you know, because of her questions, it actually got people in the conference to ask the same questions.
Yeah.
And to the point where they had to finally, you know, just cancel the press conference. And that's the end. And it said, DC Comics proudly presents Lois Lane, an enemy of the people.
Yeah, so I have a lot to say about this comic. Because, one, I'm on the same boat. I didn't need this comic. But at the same time, I don't know a lot about Lois. Reading this, I'm glad it's Rucka. I do like Rucka's work. This did very much feel like Jessica Jones. Like, Bendis is Jessica Jones. I don't know if you've ever read that. But it was in Marvel Max, which is our more adult line or whatever. It felt like this. Even the art kind of felt pretty similar. But I always thought Lois was more like cookie cutter. Like, I knew she was always kind of, like, aggressive in her work. But I didn't know she was a drinker to where you always got to fill up the mini bar.
Yeah, I was a little bothered by that.
Yeah, so I didn't know she was like, I mean, that just made her seem like she was a hardcore drinker. Although I know there are a lot of people out there that just like their occasional drink while they work. Totally fine. But it just, as a reader, it came off like she literally told this maid lady, she was like, always refill the mini bar. So I was like, damn, you're drinking a lot. It's just the way it comes off. Because if you've ever been to Vegas and you've seen the mini bars there in the hotel room, there's a lot of alcohol. But anyways, so we have that going on. And then it is just like, I prefer this. I will say this. This maxi series, I was like, damn, 12 issues of a Lois Lane story. I was like, whoa. But I rather read this story for 12 issues than Leviathan, 100%. Because she's a reporter here. She's not some magical world detective like on Batman's level. And I would prefer to read this over that Leviathan. Like, this is way more believable for me as a reader. If you're liking Leviathan, awesome. I just feel like this fits the character and it just works. And she's being like a hardcore reporter. Again, yeah. The Superman stuff with the photo kind of threw me off because I was like, I don't think we've seen that. If you listen to last week's episode, I talked about how I haven't been reading Action, but it feels exactly the same. So I was just very confused there. But I enjoyed this. I will say that if you are in that boat that you hate politics in comic books and that you don't think that politics at all should be in comic books, you're going to hate this story.
Oh, yeah.
100% you are going to hate this story. Because this is so much real world that this is literally going on today. If you were to get on Twitter today as we're recording this, they are talking about what is in this comic book. And so I love that. I'm someone that loves to see the real world brought into comic books because I think that's how they've always been. It always blows my mind when people say that politics don't belong in comic books. It's how they were made. But I love this story. They're definitely the lady that's being made fun of at the end or is being questioned by Lois Lane is supposed to be Sarah Saunders, which is a big political figure that just left the White House. So again, this is a very political story. You can tell that's where they're going with this. And they even talk about concentration camps pretty much in this. So this is a huge real-world story that is going on. So I enjoyed it. If you are somebody that doesn't like politics in your comics, you absolutely hate this. But I would read this again. I wouldn't go buy it. I'm glad we get to review these. But I think it's a solid story if you are somebody that likes the journalistic aspect in the DC universe.
Yeah, for sure. And I think... because it's Rucka loves to – he plays around with the very grounded stories.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why he's such a good fit for this story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like that aspect. Yeah, man. And, you know, this last book we're going to be talking about, I will say, you called it when you texted me.
Yeah.
I was out camping with friends out in the middle of nowhere on the outskirts of Austin. And I get this random text from you saying, hey, DC or deceased is wild. And you asked me if I had read it. And I was like, no, you know, I have no service. You know, I get pockets of service here. And I had already downloaded all the books to my phone so I could still read them without service or whatever. But I was like, let me read it real quick. And so I was literally in the car while somebody else was driving. I was in the front seat. And they were kind of just like talking and talking and talking. And I just started reading and reading and reading and reading. And then I got to the last page.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yep.
But let's not.
So I was texting Clay about this because he had sent me the books and I was reading them. Like I said, he was out, camping and whatnot. So I was just there. I was like, all right, let me read Deceased because it's the one book this week that I really wanted to read. And I finished it, and I was like, oh, man. I was like, Clay's going to cry. I was like, Clay's going to cry. So let me see if he cried yet. And so I didn't spoil it for him. I was like, hey, did you read it yet? And he was like, no. And I was like, well, let me know your reaction afterwards. And then like 10, 15 minutes later, he's like, no. So I thought this was
with
hilarious.
All the crying emojis.
Yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, welcome to mine. My hero got taken out issue one.
So, this is crazy. It's not what we thought for the very beginning of this book. And I was talking to everybody in the Slack and, you know, some other people. Everybody pretty much assumed that Alfred was going to miss his shot, that he was going to, you know, not be able to take out Bruce.
Yeah.
And that Alfred was going to be one of these zombified anti-life zombies.
Yeah.
But it shows here Alfred has killed, well, we can assume that he only killed Bruce, and we assume that Bruce killed Dick and Tim while they were, you know, because at the ending of last issue, you know, Alfred and him were all safe or whatever in the cave.
Which, that's very interesting if you think about it, because that's his no-kill rule. He's still killing them, but Bruce has always had this fine line of like, hey, these things aren't real. They're not people or they're not real things, so it's okay.
Yeah.
He's always had that fine line that people
kill
somebody.
Oh, yeah, that it's definitely showed too. Like I think in New 52 in the Court of Owls when they all like come into his cave or whatever.
Yeah.
He basically states, "Oh, these are these are the undead," and that's when he like opens with his giant suit. He's like, "Get out of my house!"
Yeah, for sure. So he has fine lines.
But you know, Alfred says, "My boys, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I couldn't save you." And he gets in the bat wing, and he like basically just starts killing all these things out in the city.
That was awesome.
And I was like, damn, like he does not stop to grieve. He's like, hey, we have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he sticks to that mission.
Yeah.
We see Harley Quinn take out the Joker.
Yeah.
That was a little lackluster. I thought it may have, been a little bit more of a story there.
Yeah.
But the Birds of Prey show up.
That was cool.
That was pretty intense. I really love how they drew Batwoman, because she's all in shadow and stuff.
Yeah.
That was pretty dope. And we get a little bit of a heart-to-heart with Damian and John.
Mm-hmm. The real John.
Yes, yes, indeed. but then also, Superman also gets into this somewhat rule that Batman has. And he knows these things aren't real, unfortunately. And they are... anti-life, they are dead basically, and so he has to take them out. He has to protect his family, he has to protect his friends, and so he goes throughout the entire Daily Planet, pushes out all of the zombified people, and it sucks, because right here I'm just going to read the dialogue. He says, "The hardest part of dealing with the infected," and this isn't dialogue from him, this is dialogue from our narrators, who we still don't know who it is. It says, "The hardest part of dealing with the infected was disassociating the infected. Could be people, they could be colleagues, and they couldn't be beloved friends." And we see that he is like looking into Perry White's office, into this shadowy figure. So I'm assuming Perry White has been turned. They're just not showing it yet.
Yeah.
If at all. Yeah. Superman, he is leaving, and he is going to, where does he say he's going?
He says, Ollie, Diana, keep my family safe.
Yeah, he's going to Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
Green Lantern, Diana, Black Canary, and Green Arrow
are
still with Lois, John, and Damian. We cut back to Atlantis, where we see Tempest and Mira, and there's a little bit of like jokey banter in here, which I think it is somewhat necessary, because you do need some of that comic relief. Usually Oliver Queen is, that person, but because of the situation, it had to be Mira.
Yeah.
And it happens right before one of the coolest panels of this series. Freaking Aquaman shredding through like all of these guards, and I'm pretty sure he is controlling these dead sharks to eat everybody, which that is badass.
Yeah, it was pretty dope. So that was really cool, and then of course it goes on to the blood infecting them. So it's in the water. This is Aqualad, right? OG Aqualad? Am I confused?
So he was Aqualad when he was younger, but he became Tempest. That is his code name now.
Yeah. So we have Tempest breathing in, or whatever, I'm assuming it's breathing underwater, in this freaking blood, and he starts turning, and then Mira's like, "It's the blood, stay away," and then, he starts ripping his face off, tries to attack Mira. She uses her, water powers, and totally just blows them all away, and dips out, because she doesn't want to get infected. Which, Mira's been a big character lately in a lot of comics.
She has, and I honestly think it's just because of, and I shouldn't say just because, but recently, with the Justice League movie that I don't usually talk about, to be completely honest, Aquaman movie, I think those have really elevated her character to become a little bit more important. So seeing more of her, especially in these what ifs or Elseworld stories, mm-hmm. To get a big enough role to be in one of those is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So I did appreciate that. I do appreciate another cameo from a hero that we just recently got a TV show for, mm-hmm. Jefferson Pierce, the Black Lightning. Yeah, and he's actually fighting Clayface, which is super crazy the way they depict Clayface with this anti-life equation inside of him. And it's on the way for, Superman is, you know, on his way to Smallville. He's saving people on the way, which I thought was really cool. Because even though he wants to go to Smallville to save his family, he knows that on the way there's going to be plenty of people that need his help.
For sure.
So he does that, and he tells them, Jefferson and his family, because his whole family is super powered. He tells them, hey, go to the Daily Planet. That's where our hub is, basically.
Yeah.
And this is where the waterworks starts. Oh my God. So I think it didn't really hit me until you see Martha Kent with the shovel.
Yeah.
Like this entire book, I'm like, yeah, you need to go protect your parents. You need to go get them if this is what you mean by Smallville. Because that's really all I thought. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. His parents are alive in this reiteration of the DC Universe, or maybe even Lana Lang, you know, things like that. But right when I saw Martha Kent with the shovel, I said, oh no.
Yeah.
And then she says, he's Jonathan's inside. I hit him, Clark. He fell. And then it has all of this, all these panels with zero dialogue, mm-hmm. and it doesn't help my emotional state at all.
Yeah.
We see that there's something struggling inside of this little basement type thing, storm cellar. Yeah. Superman breaks the lock, unhinges it, opens it, and you see Jonathan Kent completely zombified, scarred up on the face, bloody hands, and Superman does nothing. He kind of floats in the air, backs up, and he just you see the sorrow on Superman's face, and I think that's where I started. And I was like, no.
Yeah. And then he throws him back in the cellar. So he doesn't destroy his dad or anything. He just throws him back in the cellar, and then he basically seals the lock with his heat vision so he can't get out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he goes out and Martha's like, Clark, you know, it's time to go. And he just picks up his mother in his arms and then just flies off. And she's like, we can't leave your dad like this. And he's like, dad's not here.
Oh.
And then I was like, oh, shit. It was a really good ending, man. This was really good. That's exactly what I was like, man, Clay's going to cry. I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen here. And it was solid, man. Tom Taylor has been knocking these out of the park.
Yes.
He's been killing it. I know they already gave him a seventh issue, which is supposed to be a spinoff, but like I just really hope that seventh issue is just as good as these, because it feels like he's had a solid story for six issues and they're like, oh, do one more. So I'm really hoping that's not going to be, I'm hoping it's up to par with these. Is he writing that?
He is writing it. I think somebody else is doing the art, but Tom Taylor has already said that, not that if he needed to, but if he really, really wanted to, that he could make he could basically turn this into an Injustice series as far as like the length and the elaboration on the things that he could tell in this story. So I think
definitely don't want that,
and especially now with the news that Walking Dead has officially ended.
Which is something's really interesting, because I know Mark talked about that. He's like, yeah, we definitely want to start talking about that again. Well, you can't.
Because
it literally ends this week, which is insane, because they had solicits for 194 and 195.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see. I want to know the secrets behind that, because everybody's saying it's not getting canceled. He's ending it on his own thing. But apparently, I wonder if he was just like...
Apparently he made the statement, though.
Yeah.
So...
So, and apparently this last issue, I mean, I know we totally got off Deceased, but this is a big thing. But apparently this last one's kind of like an epilogue to Rick. I just want to know if he's like Yeah. I regret it when I cut his hand off. Now I kind of regret that I killed him. I was like, let's just end the series. You're so close to 200.
I know. That's the big... That's my OCD right there. It's just like, yeah. You're 7 months away. Just because apparently the whole plan was to switch the story to Negan and make Negan the protagonist of the story.
Yeah.
Which I would have no problem with. I don't think I've read an issue past 150, to be completely honest. So now I can finally catch up because there's a definite ending.
Yeah.
But,
it's coming back. There's no way he doesn't return. There's no way. Unless everybody dies or they cure this thing.
Well, I will say this. Invincible was his other longest running series, and that is done. So
he comes back. I guarantee it. I'm calling it. On this podcast, I'm letting you know, anybody that's out there, he's going to write more Walking Dead in the future.
But
guaranteed.
My thing is, what if he's like getting tired of really making comics?
And he writes so many.
And what if he's just like, hey, I'm going to end this one. Now I'm going to end this one. This Oblivion song just got a movie deal, so I'm going to end this one pretty soon. What if he just like, boom, just like stops writing comics? That would be intense and crazy.
Yeah.
But apparently he is like a, like he's not a contributor to Image. He's like a partner. He's like an official. Like,
oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. So apparently he had a lot of say in like, hey, I'm going to end this and you can't do anything about it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, he owns it. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, that's big news outside of DC. But the one thing I want to talk about with this comic, I know you mentioned the Joker thing that was kind of anticlimactic. One thing we get confirmed here is apparently with these zombies or, you know, anti-life things, you don't need to do headshots.
No.
Unless Joker's going to come back in a later issue. And Harley's like, what the hell? I shot you. And he's like, I didn't do it in the head. So, like, so they can die just, I guess, if their body just wears out. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Because he gets shot in the stomach, and he looks like he's dead. Yeah. Still dies with a smile, though, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the one thing I want to say that I'm absolutely loving about this is at the beginning of the issue, we see Alfred, you know, with all the dead bodies. He has a Batman briefcase. And we know that in the previous issue, Batman, while he was still alive, told Damian, like, hey, you know, Alfred has something for you. I wish I could have saw you get this one day, but he's going to bring it to you or whatever. And he's still going on with that mission. I am so pumped to see what this is going to be. Like, if this is going to be a mini Batman Damian costume, I'm so pumped to see this. I really want to see what it's going to look like. Because when, I mean, and Tom Taylor does this. He always does cool stuff in his, like, you know, Elseworld type stories. I mean, we got Green Lantern, Black Canary. Like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
And so I really want to see what this, like, Damian Batman character is going to look like. So that has me excited to keep reading, and I'm hoping it happens in the next issue, like on the final panel he puts on the suit or something in the next issue, but we'll see. That's definitely got me excited.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing that I was going to say, just because I made a big deal about it at the ending of this book, Tom Taylor is one of the best writers when it comes to getting you in the feels.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened in the Injustice book. It's happening now in his Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man run. And it happened
Batman
here.
Batman Annual number 3.
Batman Annual number 3, the Father's Day issue. Yeah. You know, he is just... And it's crazy because he can have something so lighthearted as Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man and the Father's Day issue on Batman Annual number 3. Or he can go as dark as something like Deceased.
Yeah.
So I just want to commend his range as a writer, and I'm really looking forward to the next 4 issues.
Yeah, and if you're a Marvel fan, Marvel's gotten very jealous of this story and is bringing back Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, so, and somebody, you know, somebody commented on my thing, a friend from another podcast, Brent from Borderless Fans. He commented and said that, you know, Marvel Zombies was made in 2005. And I know that it was made way back then. And I will be completely honest. I will attempt to read the first issue at least. But let me just say, Marvel looked at the numbers for Deceased number 1 and said, hey, We need to try that. But there, and let me just say,
yeah.
There's only one thing wrong with that. This is the first time DC has tried this.
Yeah.
That's why it was such a success. Mm-hmm. This will be Marvel's...
Although, I will say, was Marvel Zombies before Blackest Night?
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say. Because they did that. So they kind of done do a zombie believe. Thing before.
Let me try this real quick. Let me look this up.
Yeah, because I will say they did a whole zombie thing there, but it's not like this. I mean, they were brought back from the dead. Like, they had power rings. They did all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, they haven't had a zombie story. But, yeah, I just thought that was pretty funny. I saw your tweet, and I was like, oh, Marvel's bringing back their stuff. But, yeah, again, yeah, definitely Marvel did zombies first, but they're just bringing back a property because of this. I doubt that was in the works at all. Like, nobody's like, let's bring it back, man. Because Marvel just seems like they're kind of just doing a whole bunch of stuff right now. They're rebooting every, like, 2 months. So, I highly doubt that they have the zombie thing in the works.
All right, so... Blackest Night, number one. No, not the director's cut. I just want Blackest Night, number one. So, was on sale July 15th, 2009. Marvel Zombies, number one, 2005.
Nice.
So, Marvel Zombies technically did it first. But I will say
that's... We did the multiverse first. Get into that battle.
No, but I honestly think, like, Marvel honestly saw those numbers for Tom Taylor's Deceased number one and got really, really excited. Now it would be really messed up if they're like, hey, Tom Taylor, do you want to write an issue?
That would be something.
That would be total shade. But I think that's it. That's all five issues. Wasn't all that great, to be completely honest. Kind of lackluster. The biggest story, of course, was this Deceased issue number three. I think the biggest thing as far as the other books is quite possibly just the cover art for some of these books. I really... do like the variant for Lois Lane, and the Nick Darrington Doom Patrol cover was probably the best things out of those stories. And you know, we did make those comments. Lois Lane was really political and grounded. I really appreciated that. And Doom Patrol, just because of the wackiness, really fun, but just wasn't really great for first time readers. So,
yeah, for sure.
With that. Juice, I'm going to have to ask you to do it again.
Oh, man. You want me to do it? Okay, before we go, though, I will say with – because you made the Tom Taylor comment about if Marvel would ask him to do something. I think after Deceased is done, DC locks him down to an exclusive contract.
They need to.
Yeah.
They
need to. I think it's going to happen. Everybody's hoping he takes over Batman instead of Bendis. I would totally – I would continue buying Batman if that happens because I wanted to stop collecting comics because they're taking up so much space. But if he starts doing Batman, I'll continue buying it. If it's Bendis, I'm stopping. But I just want to throw that out there. But yes, if we're ending this podcast, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being on. I do want to point out, if that Batman 74 comes out next week, right? If it's fire, you got to let me do a segment on that podcast.
Okay. First, before we do an outro, where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me on my YouTube channel, Bat from the Box, or Juice from the Box. I got two of them. They're very different channels. Juice from the Box on everything else. Just... all one word, Juice from the Box, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. You can all find me there.
Twitch.
And yeah, I'm always down to talk nerdy stuff.
And Twitch.
Oh, yes, Twitch. We're always streaming over there. But I also do YouTube live streams as well now on Saturdays. Unless
I saw that.
And
I
then
saw
they're
that.
On Tuesday nights. But, you know, that happens too.
Yeah, and then, of course, you can find me at Fanboy Clay. You can find my show at Fanboy Comics Pod on Twitter. And, of course, this show, Comic Book Legion, at CB_Legion. And, of course, the website, comicbooklegion.com. If you have any questions, you can always email us at comicbooklegionpodcast@gmail.com to see if you would like to be a contributor to writing our reviews so that way you can read some of these books early, just like Juice was saying. But, yeah. With that, Juice.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, I'm your host, Juice Box. When you wake up in the morning, ask yourself something. If I have my daily dose of juice, see you guys next time.